Hava Nagila, Hava Nagila, Hava Nagila in Smacha.
Really, that's the song? That's the song?
You told me to find something with flavor from that particular part of the world.
Oh, my goodness. Well, folks, you are listening to the Drew Marshall Show. And joining us momentarily is Simca Yakubovich, an Emmy Award-winning filmmaker, investigative archaeologist. In 2007, came up with an incredible documentary called The Lost Tomb of Jesus, and it created worldwide debate. It really did. And, you know, look, I'm all for people going off on things, and as long as it stirs up some great conversation about whether this is real or not real, it has to do with God or Jesus or faith or whatever, love it. Fantastic. So had he found the tombs belonging to the family of Jesus of Nazareth? Well, now comes the follow-up film, The Jesus Discovery. And Simca shakes up the archaeological world again with a stunning new find he claims revolutionizes our understanding of Jesus and the birth of Christianity. Has he discovered the earliest proof of Jesus' resurrection after death? Part archaeological adventure, part biblical history, part forensic science. It's kind of like CSI in Israel. Ladies and gentlemen, Simca Yakubovich. You're in Israel right now, is that right?
Yeah, I'm in Jerusalem, Drew.
I was there 2 years ago for a month filming, and wow, that is an intense place, man. It just reeks of intensity.
Yeah, well, it's true. Passover, first day of Passover and the Sabbath is over. It's nighttime here, and amazingly enough, it fell Passover on a Friday. For your Christian listeners, the time of the crucifixion, that's when Passover fell, on a Friday. It doesn't happen every year because it's the Jewish calendar is part lunar, but it happened this year, and it's strange that it coincided with our new archaeological discovery.
So is there a different vibe over there? Is it, you know, are people sitting around going, you know, this is intense, this is really, you know, legitimately the actual moment, the actual time?
Well, I mean, most of the people here, obviously, like me, are Jewish, and we were celebrating Passover, and it's been a wonderful... I actually haven't celebrated... I've celebrated in Israel, but not in Jerusalem, so it was really special. And we just come out of it, and we're talking about the new findings.
Yeah.
By the way, the film is airing on Vision on Thursday, April... This is coming Thursday, April 12th, at 10 p.m., and the book is out already, Simon & Schuster, and they're both called The Jesus Discovery. And I'll be happy to share what's new about all this.
Yeah, Vision TV is going to air two versions of The Jesus Discovery, but I think people should, well, I don't know. I saw the 90-minute version, and man, there's some great footage on that. VisionTV.ca is where you want to go to find out more about this. The first thing I got to ask you, Simca, is it always that much of a pain in the butt dealing with the Israel antiquities associated with the IAA? Are they protecting things the way they should be?
Well, you know, I think in this instance, at the end of the day, we worked everything out. The Israel Antiquities Authority gave us a license to dig. So we actually operated under a license. The first time in 2007, I went to a tomb that had already been excavated. So I didn't feel I needed a license because it was really open. But it's been redeclared a closed archaeological site, and they gave us the license. When I say us, we got Professor Rami Arav of University of Nebraska, Professor Tabor of UNC Charlotte, and in this instance, usually filmmakers follow archaeologists around, and we come after the fact. In this instance, the filmmaking led the way, because at the end of the day, in Israel today, you cannot dig a Jesus-era tomb. And the reason you can't is because the religious Jewish activists say you're not allowed to disturb the dead. So therefore, you cannot go into a burial cave. Now, the only time archaeologists get to go into a burial cave is when a bulldozer smashes into one or tomb robbers smash it up. You never see a pristine cave. We are the first to get a license and to get everybody, the religious, the municipality, the archaeological community, the police, everybody to agree to support us. And the reason being, the compromise was that we would excavate without physically going in. Now, how do you do that? You do it by locating a tomb. We located our tomb under a building. Imagine living in an apartment building, and underneath the your basement of the building where you have your storage rooms, there's a 2,000-year-old Jesus-era sealed tomb with the bones and the coffin still there. Now, imagine we came along, we used ground-penetrating radar to figure out where under the building the tomb was, and then we drilled holes, and we introduced a robotic camera. We didn't physically go in, and that's why we got everybody's support. We introduced because we're not disturbing anything or moving anything around. We created a robotic camera in Toronto. Walter Clausen, brilliant. He created a robotic camera. We had a high-def camera and a snake camera that could sneak in between coffins that are a centimeter and a half apart. And we filmed. It took us 4 years to get everybody on side, and we came out with what I think is perhaps the most important archaeological find ever, at least of the last century.
But Simca, you ran into some serious tensions over there. I mean, you had issues with the tenants of the building. You had issues with the IAA, with the religious zealots, whose name I can't remember the name of the group, but the guys who went off. Actually, they called you a Nazi. And how did that feel, considering your parents, escaped that? You know, were part of that whole thing.
That was pretty nasty. You see it in the film. We are physically. You see, actually, the amazing thing about the film and the book is that the film, you actually see the discoveries as they happen in real time. Usually come after the fact. Here you see the process, and you see we were physically attacked by these guys. We needed police, and you see in one place they had pepper spray to kind of protect us. As you say, they got out of hand, and they started calling me a Nazi, which I did not appreciate, being a son of Holocaust survivors. But at the end of the day, the only way I could overcome all these obstacles is by not losing my cool.
Yeah,
you know, if I lost my cool, that would have been it. But I just kept engaging these guys. Like, why are you calling me? I went to their rabbi. I said, how could you condone this? And he said, well, I don't condone that. I said, what's your problem? Let's just talk. What did I do that so upsets you? Well, you intend to go disturb the dead. I said, no, I don't. I said, I'm religious like you. Tell me, you know, I'm an Orthodox Jew. What's your problem? He said, well, I said, if I put a camera, would that be okay? Well, a camera, yeah. So at each instance when somebody said, I mean, the IAA, they said, you can't get a license. You're not an archaeologist. You're a filmmaker dealing in archaeology, but that's not good enough. So I would bring up one guy, he's an archaeologist. Yeah, but his university is no good. They don't give graduate degrees in archaeology. We kept trying to overcome obstacles. It took us 2.5 years to get all the permits in place. As you say, we're physically attacked, abused. But at the end of the day, you know what? Everybody was holding hands, and we put those robotic camera down into the tomb, and we came up with amazing stuff.
We're on the phone with Simca Yakovlevich, who is an Emmy Award-winning filmmaker, investigative archaeologist, and he's got this special that's coming out on Vision TV, The Jesus Discovery. It's on Thursday. It's on Monday next week. 90 minutes, 60 minutes. Go to visiontv.ca. Find out which one works best for you and what time zone you're in. Simca, look, I guess this is a follow-up to the first one, right? So this second documentary you've done, is this pretty much to help sort of substantiate the first one?
In some ways, yes, but when you do science, and I think we're doing science, you have to be open to come what may, you know? And just to set the stage for people listening who don't remember what was going on, in 1980, around Passover time, coincidence, just before Passover, a bulldozer building a building in an area of Jerusalem, a suburb called East Alpiot, smashed into a Jesus-era tomb. In that tomb, there were 10 ossuaries or bone boxes, little coffins that they used in those days, made out of limestone, and 6 of them had inscriptions, all of them fitting with the New Testament family. 2 Marys. One Josie, which is the exact nickname that the Gospel of Mark gives for one of the brothers of Jesus, and Jesus, son of Joseph. There's a man buried there named Jesus, son of Joseph. Now, we thought this is an amazing thing because the people who got those boxes, got those inscriptions, never made a deal out of them. They put them in a warehouse and didn't say anything, didn't say boo to anyone. For 16 years, they didn't even publish this and tell anyone. Then they published it in a little-known archaeological magazine. Then they were quiet again. We brought this story to the world in 2007. We went to a statistician at the University of Toronto, Professor Andre Feuerberger, and he said, look, this basically, he said in very scientific language, this doesn't seem like a coincidence to me. It's got to be that guy. He would say it a little different. Now, what happened, the world reacted very negatively. He said, no, okay, there was a man named Jesus, son of Joseph, buried there, but it doesn't have to be that Jesus, son of Joseph. It's somebody else. So what we did was this. 60 meters from that tomb, there's another tomb. That one was never excavated. No one knew what was inside. They just knew there was a tomb there. And it's under a building, under a patio. And what we said, wait a minute, let's look at that tomb, because that may shed light on the first tomb. If it is the Jesus, son of Joseph, maybe the man who buried him, Joseph Arimathea, is buried underneath that building. If it's not Jesus, son of Joseph, maybe there'll be nothing related to him. And that's when we went on our quest to see whether Tomb 2 substantiates Tomb 1.
Okay, the controversy that surrounds this is, you know, there's in the New Testament, there's a number of scriptures that would suggest that Jesus was raised from the dead physically, so his bones would not be hanging around the way that you're suggesting. So do you think that, Simca, you've got to have been, you must have been accused of trying to discredit Christianity. It's basically an attack by a Jew on the sort of the foundational beliefs that Jesus was risen physically. So how have you pushed back against that?
Okay, well, I want to clarify several things. Number one, the issue is not the people who, I mean, even Christians don't understand, many of them, their own issues, sort of. They're reacting emotionally. The issue of resurrection doesn't come up with this archaeology, because according to the Gospels, Jesus rose, and then he walked around for 30 days, and then he left this earth, right? He's not here now. He physically ascended according to the interpretation of the church. Now, resurrection is not an issue. He could have been resurrected, walked around for 30 days, and then spiritually ascended. The issue is ascension and not resurrection. I just wanted to make that clear. I'm not saying that, I'm not pushing resurrection or anything else. I'm not a theologian and I'm not a Christian. Right. I'm just saying it's not even an issue. That's number one. The question is, if you have Jesus' body or bones around, did he not physically ascend? That was the question that a lot of people mixed up with resurrection, and they're upset about it anyway.
Right.
But I have to tell you, number two is, would I as a Jew have an agenda to undo Christianity? And the answer is, I don't have an agenda to undo anything. I'm a journalist, an Emmy Award, as you put it, investigative journalist. I'm using the tools of investigative journalism and archaeology. My job is to report on a real archaeological find.
Okay.
And not to suppress it for theological reasons. And as for being a Jew, this is an important point you raise. People say to me often, you know, you're a Jew, why are you kind of messing with our Jesus? Well, with due respect, he's a kind of my Jesus too. This is Jerusalem, the capital of the Jewish state. Jesus never left. He never visited Canada. He lived and died in Israel, in the Galilee in Jerusalem. When I'm reporting about this archaeology, I'm reporting about my history. This is my history. And for 2,000 years, Jews were afraid to report on it because, you know, you had little things like the Inquisition. So all I'm doing is reporting. Now, if there's a problem with my reporting, that's okay. I'm not saying that I'm, infallible. I'm just reporting. And all I want to do is set some archaeology on the table, and then people can discuss it.
Right. Well, now, yeah, and that's what people are doing. They really are discussing. Like, for example, Eric Myers, who's a Jewish archaeologist, I mean, he disagrees with you. He says that what you found was not a fish with Jonah coming out of it.
Okay, so let me describe what we found. And by the way, you know, many Christians are taking this new find as good news. They're getting very excited about it, and they're saying, wait a minute, we have to think out what archaeology, maybe we don't agree with the interpretations of Simca and his colleagues, but maybe what we should do is look again at the archaeology. Why? Because if Tomb 1 didn't exist, if all that existed was this new tomb, Tomb 2, this is nothing but good news in a sense for Christians. Why? What did we find? We found a cross on an ossuary. Now, our archaeologists and scholars will say, yeah, but a cross wasn't a Christian symbol in the first century. It only became a Christian symbol in the fourth century. I don't agree. I think that's wrong. I think the cross was already some kind of Christian symbol in the first century.
Yeah, except the, except that you hunker down on the fact that you say that the sign of Jonah was the symbol. I mean, that was the symbol of Christian.
Yeah, but I'm saying if we all we would have found is a cross. We found a cross. Nobody's talking about it. But if all we would have found is a cross on the coffin,
right.
People said, you should have found a fish. A fish would convince us.
All right, right.
If we found a fish, they would say, you know, the first biblical sign, the first biblical symbol of Christianity was the sign of Jonah. Why? You've got 108 signs of Jonah, more than any other symbol in the catacombs in the burial of Christians under the streets of Rome. 108. Also, Jesus is the only sign he gives in the Gospels. They say, give us a sign. He says, I'm not going to give you a sign. This is an evil generation. The only sign I'm going to give you is the sign of Jonah. And if all we would have found is a cross, they would have said, you should have found a fish.
Right, right, right.
If we would have found a fish, they would have said, you should have found the sign of Jonah. Well, guess what? We found, carved into the same ossuary, a fish, a giant fish spitting out a stick man. We found the sign of Jonah, the earliest Christian icon symbol ever found, 250 years earlier than anything in the catacombs of Rome.
So why does Eric Myers disagree with you so much?
Because he didn't find it. I don't know. You know, I mean, you know, all kinds of so-called experts are saying it's not a fish. First they said, Eric Myers said it was a pillar. That's what Eric Myers said. Then Joan Taylor of Oxford laughed at him and said, it's not a pillar. It's a perfume bottle in the shape of a fish. This is all at the website of the American Society of Oriental Research. It's a perfume bottle. And she gave three examples of perfume bottles that look like fish. None of them from the right period. None of them from Israel. So then they said, look, Joan, you're right to say that Eric doesn't know, you know, that he's calling a fish a pillar, but it's a perfume bottle. Now they're saying it's a vase. You know what? I did the ultimate test. Because all these people are New Testament scholars and archaeologists. They're not art historians. They're not experts in early Jewish art. I've spoken to art historians. They say it's a fish. You don't know. But I did the ultimate test. When you know, this is not 1984. I can't look at a fish and be told by an expert that it's not a fish, that it's really a vase. I called my six-year-old daughter over. I showed her the picture with the expert on the phone. And I said, honey, what daddy wants to know, what's this a picture of? And she said, my little daughter, Michaela, she said, daddy, it's a fish with a person inside. Right? That's the sign of Jonah. And how do I know? Because the greatest expert in the world, a child, can tell that it's you know, viewers can, you know, people out there, your listeners, can just tune in, right? Or and make up their own mind. If it looks to them like, if this fish looks to them like something else. But besides that, if that's all we had, but we don't just have that. We have an inscription. We have an inscription that all experts except one, all of them, except one, a guy who changed his mind, all of them, Professor James Charlesworth of Princeton Theological Seminary, Professor Taylor, Rami Arav, all of them, Professor Bauckham, everybody agrees it has something to do with the resurrection.
Yeah, except, and I guess, let me just finish on that last part. You know, from my limited understanding, the Jews believe in a general resurrection versus Jesus being resurrected by himself. So if the body... if the body really hadn't have been there, you know, there, I mean, for example, let's say, like Paul.
If you look in Paul, Paul doesn't talk about that you're going to get somebody who, you know, who died with his body exploded in some mine. He doesn't say that the body parts are going to come together and the corpse is going to be resuscitated. When he talks about resurrection, he says it's like you get rid of your old clothes. And you're standing there naked, and then you get new clothes. He's talking about a new body.
But if there would have been no reason to speak of resurrection, if he was just you know, another Jew who taught some good stuff and was going to get resurrected with everybody else, with all the rest of the Jews. The only reason they would have talked about resurrection in the way that these, you know, these ossuaries you're claiming they would have talked about it is because he did literally, you know, he had been resurrected ahead of everybody else.
Well, you know, this is where we get, I say, first the archaeology and then the theology. We have here a cross,
right,
and the fish,
right,
and the Jonah, and the resurrection in Scripture, all next to a guy named Jesus, son of Joseph.
Right.
So what I say is, maybe the way later Christianity understood resurrection is not the way his own followers, these people who are buried in this coffin, who are they? They're people who knew Jesus. They heard him say the son of Jonah. These coffins date to that time. So what I'm saying is, maybe they understood it differently. Maybe they understood it that he's been exalted,
yeah,
right? Because he's at the right hand of the throne of God. I don't know what they meant. All I can tell you is they seem to have meant something different by resurrection than later Christian theology. So my thing is this. Let's look at the archaeology. Let's translate. Let's argue about what does it say. Does it say he was raised past tense? Or does it call on him to rise up, bring on the redemption? I think it says rise up, exclamation mark. But this is something where interpretation kicks in.
Sure.
So instead of saying that a fish is not a fish and you know, that's silliness as far as I'm concerned. Let's look at the fact and let's...
Well, yeah, but the whole thing rests on whether it is a fish or not, and you're saying, let's not discuss whether it is a fish or isn't a fish, except your whole thing kind of rides on the fact that it's a fish.
No, because this is first of all, I never say let's not discuss. The only time I say let's not discuss is when it's plain as the nose on your face.
Right.
Meaning, I don't want to discuss whether, you know, you really exist. I take it for a given. Philosophers can sit around and argue, maybe I'm now talking to a hologram. I don't know. But I got to take some things as basic.
Yeah.
It's not 1984. We're not living in the Soviet Union. When I'm looking at a fish, it's a fish. You know, if it waddles like a duck and quacks like a duck, then it's a fish. So what I'm saying is that if the fish was not clear, then we would debate about it. But that's clear. The inscription is open to interpretation. The Jonah stick figure is open to interpretation. So what I'm saying is, let's look at the facts. Let's separate nonsense from real interpretation, right? Let's not sit there and say, it looks like a cloud. Maybe they make a cloud. I have a fish that looks like a cloud.
Right.
Let's just look at the facts. But let's start with this. Even my worst detractors are saying, this guy Cargill, he spends all his days on his blog attacking me. But even he says in the pages of the Washington Post, this is important. This is different. The head of the Israel Antiquities Authority, Jerusalem District, Dr. Yuval Baruch, who's always been critical of everything I've done, said on the front page of Israel's leading newspaper, Haaretz, this is different. This is unique.
Okay.
Now, think about it. If the other tomb did not exist, Christians would be dancing in the street and saying, this is proof of a resurrection. I'm going to read it as past tense, not future tense. But because it's close to the other tomb, they're saying, wait a minute. You know, am I happy about this Jonah resurrection inscription? I am. But if he's right about that, if he's right about the other one. So what's happening is that theology, feelings are getting mixed up with just, let's look at the facts. Let's see if it's a fish.
Yeah.
Let's see if most of us, if I was a vision, I would put a little vote at the end. You know, is it fish? Is it filler? Is it perfume bottle? Maybe it's the original inventor of gefilte fish. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Look, Simca, from my point of view, I love anything that stirs up discussion about God stuff, about faith stuff, about Jesus stuff. And if it's controversial, great. Fantastic. Simca, Yakubovich, I wanted to tell everyone, I wanted to pitch everyone when this thing is on. Vision TV is going to be airing two versions of the Jesus Discovery, a 60-minute version on Thursday, April 12th, at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, and a 90-minute version with never-before-seen footage on Monday, April 16th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. VisionTV.ca is where you want to go to check all this out. I look forward to talking to you again when you're back in Toronto, Simca.
Great, and don't forget my book, The Jesus Discovery. I got to pitch that. I look forward to, I always love talking to you. You're open to discussion, and at the end of the day, we spent 4 years, built robotic arms, spent more than $1 million, and we could have come up with nothing. For me, just as a viewer watching this, I'm going, my God, I can't believe what we did. I'm so happy that we have we have a story to tell and a discovery to tell. And now, you know, now it's not my tomb anymore. It's up to the world to discuss it.
Simca, thank you for your time. Shalom.
Thank you. Shalom from Jerusalem.
Bye-bye. Folks, Simca Yakimovich on the Drew Marshall Show. A very, very short break, and then we're going to come back with possibly the other side of the story from Dr. Craig Evans, professor of New Testament at Acadia University. He was on the Journey to Christmas special that I was a part of. He has some things to say.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Hey, folks, I want to tell you about the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. You ready for this? For $12.50, that's right, only $12.50, we'll mention your organization's name, website, and a brief description. Did you catch that? During each show, we'll read out your organization's name, website, and a brief description for only $12.50. Now, obviously, there's no point in doing that only once during a four-hour show, so we'll read your advertisement four times per show for an entire month, and each time we do it, it'll only cost you $12.50. It's kind of like putting an advertisement up on every church bulletin in the GTA, except you don't have to get permission from that grumpy old lady at the front desk. Now look, because there are limited spots available for our 1250 special, why don't you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250. Now sure, we're right in the middle of things here in the show, but if you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250, we'll take your name and number and call you back on Monday to sign up for the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. This is nuts. Are you sure we want to do this? How am I supposed to make any money?